Welcome to the B-side. It is August 17th. We have been B-sideless. B-sideless without Steve and Tyler for about a month. But we wanted to give you some content. We got a bit to talk about. It's been a month. Lots is going on in the church. Holidays, people have been away and whatever. But we're back. And we're getting ready for fall. This B-side is not just me, in case you're worried. You haven't heard anybody else talk yet. Should be used to that, because I talk a lot. But I am joined, as always, with by our senior pastor, Steve Croker. How's your summer going, Steve?
Good. Sometimes I see how long I can go into the B-side without speaking. It's a little game I play.
Yeah. Yeah, that happens. I do the same thing in the middle sometimes when you're answering. I'm like, how many times can I say in like 5 minutes? Anyway,
summer's going well. The big news of the day is
50th.
No, Paul's back.
Paul's back. Today, right. I already forgot about it.
Monday, August 17th. We welcomed home our good friend
Paul Packard.
Welcome home.
Yeah.
This is where he lives.
Yeah.
And we welcome to work.
Okay, we set up a bed for him. Yeah, we missed him so much for 3 months. He's not allowed to
leave. We're not allowed to leave.
Yeah.
He's in his office if you
will. No, I said to him on Sunday, I feel like we were just getting used to life without him. Because it was like a grieving period for about 6 weeks after he left. We were like, whoa, where's Paul? And then we started figuring out life without Paul. And he said, well, I could just take another month if you want. And I said, no, please, we want you back. It's great. It was, we had like a staff kind of team lunch today on our sweet barbecue, with leftover hot dogs.
Still eating some, leftover hot dogs.
From some event that we've done. It's just good to be back. It's, all summer with Paul gone is, glad that he had the time, obviously, but it's nice to kind of have the gang back together and not feeling, just that perpetual feeling in the summer sometimes where we're incomplete, you know. I was away a bit, you were away a bit, Cher's been away, like, it's just kind of like, where is everybody? There's been days where there's one or two of us in the office.
Our church is often away on Sundays.
Right, yeah,
we missed you, folks.
Yeah, if you haven't been to church on Sunday in a while, a couple things. One, we're still meeting Sundays, 10 a.m., right here, hasn't changed, in case you're confused.
I mean, the funny thing is about summers, obviously a lot of people away, vacation,
right,
long weekend, camping. There's people that have like a cottage or something and they're literally gone every weekend all summer. It's great for them. Wonderful.
Yeah.
So our numbers are clearly down by maybe 20% or so. But what's interesting is there's Sundays where we actually get probably more visitors in the summer months than any other time of the year. I mean, that in early fall.
Yeah.
Like a regular, you know, third week in February, we might have a new family or something like that, but summer people seem to be checking other churches out, or there are a lot more people moving into town.
Yeah.
So like, it feels like there's Sundays where you're looking out from stage and from on the platform and you go, I see a whole bunch of unfamiliar faces, but where's our church family? Yeah. Like they're all gone, and like a whole other group of people. So it's actually been quite a number of newer people either come once or twice or visiting for the weekend or who have started connecting into our church at kind of an odd time where it feels like there's a little bit less going on and yet a lot of new faces, and it's great, especially as we get into the fall.
Which is, I think, an important part of why we always want to put our best foot forward every Sunday.
Every Sunday.
Often, you know, there's people, I would say with that just on Sunday reading the scripture and doing the announcements and welcome this morning, just going like, there, you know, I think I spotted four or five people that, families, couples, groups of people that I went, I haven't seen you before, I don't think. And for a small church, that's a smaller church. That's relatively impressive that, you know, I was laughing, just thinking like, it's really easy to spot them when a long-standing family is not there and the space they usually sit in is vacated and then there's somebody different there. It just doesn't usually happen. And you go, oh, yeah, you're not so-and-so. Yeah, that's great. But so it's encouraging. But we've been trucking along this summer. It's been actually a really cool summer in the pulpit as we've gone through the book of Acts, covered some really interesting topics. And then one of the other things that you may not have heard about yet if you haven't been around for a while is this fall, as we launch into a new kind of ministry year, we're going to kick it off with a celebration of our 50th anniversary as a church. So you may have seen some videos. Steve and Rhoda had a kind of a goofy video announcing the 50th celebration, September 20th, which was really funny. If you haven't, check it out. I'm sure it's online. We're really excited about it. It's a unique opportunity for us to commemorate this kind of important milestone in our church's history. So I thought it'd be neat for a few minutes, in case you haven't heard anything about it, for Steve and I to maybe just give you a little insight into what that's going to look like. So, Steve, is it something like we can expect? Is it like reunional? Like, are we going to see a retrospect of our past at this 50th? Those kind of things tend to happen in these kind of anniversaries, or might it be something different?
You know, I think that's the path they took at the 40th anniversary, which is obviously before you and I were here, but. Yeah. From what I've heard, it is, and they did it kind of more that way. So for those who are at the 40th, they might kind of picture it that way. But I think we've gone a different direction this time. There's going to be some elements of that. We're going to set up a sort of a remembrance. I don't know, remembrance is right the wrong word, but it's a retrospective room. We're going to convert the fireside room. Lots of pictures and stuff like that from the past. So there's going to be some of that. And people from the past are more than welcome to join us and celebrate with us. But the elders, thinking about what should we do, what should it look like, really had a passion for using this as a springboard for evangelism. So it was not primarily, let's celebrate us and the good things that have happened throughout and think back on those who have been here in the past and let's call up all the pastors from the past and honor them all or things like that. And that's fine. That's good stuff. But that wasn't really what we were after this time. Instead, it was like, you know, we've been here 50 years. Let's use this as an excuse, an opportunity to throw a celebration, invite the whole community, and proclaim the gospel.
Yeah.
We've always been about proclaiming Jesus. We say we're about proclaiming Jesus. Let's make this thing, of all things, about proclaiming Jesus as well. And when you throw that sort of opportunity celebration events, there might be some neighbors, friends, people in the community that would be open to joining us for that celebration and to connect them into our church. And hopefully our prayer is that people will hear the gospel that wouldn't otherwise. So instead of, there's going to be some elements of that sort of reminisce
right.
and look back, but the primary thrust is how can we tell people about Jesus? It's been our mission for 50 years. It's what we've been about is proclaiming Jesus here, proclaiming Jesus around the world through mission work. Let's make our 50th honor that initial intention and do the same at that event. So it's going to be a gospel-focused day. It'll be a short gospel presentation message. Why does Jesus matter?
Yeah.
We're going to show a video that we had made, kind of what's the vision of the church, what are we all about? We're going to take an offering that day, special offering towards our 50 for 50 project, which is coming in quite nicely. I think we've raised already $23,000 towards the $50,000 we're hoping to raise, which is, if you're not aware, we're going to split that where half of it will be towards doing some capital projects, keeping this building in tip-top shape for ministry for the next season, next number of years. And half of it, we're going to build a building in India for a growing church that has no place to meet and help equip them to reach their community. And so we want to focus on that because, you know, for 50 years, one of the things we've been a hallmark of our church is global missions in a way that I have not seen in other churches. Like
a lot
of churches are missions churches. Our church is more of a mission minded as far as sacrificial giving, prayer, than a lot of churches twice and three times, and four times the size, you know. So it seemed to be appropriate. For our church, with all the passion for missions, the sacrificial giving for missions and mission trips and church planting, mercy ministry around the world that this church has done in 50 years, that to do something like that on our 50th just seemed like the right thing to do.
Yeah. I think it's a really unique way to mark 50 years. And one of the things I think is interesting is as someone who's kind of relatively new to this community. And being involved is it's a really tight-knit community. It seems like everyone knows everyone.
Someone.
Well connected. But there's a little part of me that always wonders is, you know, in a church like ours, we're in a neighborhood. We're kind of in a nondescript building, nothing flashy about us. 50th anniversary, like, are we going to be able to get that person that didn't even know we existed?
Yeah.
That doesn't have any church affiliation, doesn't even, you know, maybe lives at like 4th and 56th, never comes down 12th, and get them to come and be like, oh, this place has been around for 50 years. I didn't know it had been around for 50 minutes. Yeah. I was just thinking through, like, how neat that would be that to kind of wow someone with the impact and to be able to tell the story of the church, but also piggyback on that with, like, for the last, what, 16 weeks or so, we've been talking about being sent and being missional, and that, and even Sunday's message was about the sense of, like, the gospel spreads through ordinary, faithful men and women sharing the good news of Jesus
their
with
bit.
Their lives and their words with their neighbors, and they're doing their bit. And I think our 50th is really a way for our people who've been sitting under this teaching to respond appropriately with that, and I'm excited. I think it'll be a fun afternoon and a good morning together, like eating and celebrating.
Yeah, we've got some cool stuff planned. One of the things I think I'm excited about with this is, you know, we looked at different, how are we going to advertise it? So we should do some advertising, let people know about it. One of the things, well, you can take an ad in the newspaper. So we looked into that. We're actually going to do that. We're going to put a small ad in the paper. We looked at, should we do a mail drop where we send it to everyone's house in all of South Delta or all of Tawasin or something like that? And we looked into prices for that. It's actually very expensive. It's something we thought about. We looked into prices. What does it cost to do like a bus stop sign? What does that cost? You know, and looked into that. And so we researched all kinds of, what's the best method?
Did you guys look into Skywriter?
No.
That was my idea. We could have done a Skywriter.
Yeah.
On a Saturday at Centennial Beach.
Yeah.
You know?
Do a few laps.
I guess that's why I was on holidays.
Yeah.
Whatever.
So, what we decided to do, I mean, we'll do an ad in the paper as well.
Of course.
But the thing we got excited about is what we're going to do is print thousands. I'm not sure how many exactly. Into the thousands. But one or two.
Yeah.
A couple thousand invites
that
are sort of, come to this event. You're welcome to come. Here's what we're about. A little information about us, the church, and that. And instead of getting, like, kind of posted all over the mall, we're actually going to have people deliver them on their street and just drop them in mailboxes. And by getting, you know, 40 or 50 families to go, yeah, we'll do our street. We'll do our bit. We'll get the word out. We'll get thousands of these things delivered and literally inviting our neighbors and not asking people to go ring doors and make a, you know, evangelism pitch as much as just drop it off at your neighbor's house and down your street. And I think what I like about it is what we need is our whole church family to be involved. And if we all do our bit, it can make a huge impact. And we're not just depending on, oh, let's just put it in the budget and the church takes care of it.
Yeah.
And I don't have to do anything. No, we all want everyone to do a bit and to help out in their own little way. And it's like Nehemiah building the wall, where we were preaching through that book, and you know, Nehemiah had everyone do the little bit of the wall by their house, and everyone does a little bit, and you're going to take care of the part by your house because it's going to keep your family safe, and everyone does their bit from this section to this section, and together they all build this thing in amazingly fast time because everyone does a bit.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the same idea where we go, if everyone does a bit and everyone covers the neighborhood where they live, their immediate neighbors, we can get the word out in a really massive way, not by any one thing, but all of us doing a bit.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the hope. You're going to hear more about that soon. Those postcard invite things are getting printed now and will probably be ready in the next week, and we can start getting word out. And so if you're willing to spread word on your street, contact Inga.
Yeah.
Email the office, call the office. We got a map on our office wall where we're going to be highlighting, okay, someone's got this street, someone's got that street, so we don't cross paths with each other. But that we're going to get these things out and commit to do your block or second block and just, you know, go for a walk one evening and it's done.
Yeah. Fun thing to do with your kids.
Yeah.
Or
get involved, the whole family, whatever. Involve the dog.
Yeah.
Family walk. And
some slobbery invites, but there'll be invites nonetheless. Yeah, and there'll be ways I think to get involved on the day of. Like we're going to running food trucks or food booths and bands and setups.
We're going to need parking help.
Games.
We're going to have an extra however many people here, and half our lot's going to be used for sort of the family festival. Everyone's going to have to do their part. Yeah. So
yeah, we're probably going to need 50 or 60 at least volunteers kind of doing some bits to pull off that Sunday morning, I'm sure. So, but I'm excited. I think it's going to be a really cool time as a church family to kind of to celebrate together this 50 and the next 50 in a sense. I think it's a cool way to do that. But
I loved one Sunday not too long ago, a few weeks ago, I was talking to Faith McMillan, and her husband, she hates taking credit for it, but her and her husband sort of had the original vision. There was other families that really helped make it happen, but they had this vision to see this church started. And she was saying, you know, I'm so glad we're just not going to focus on what it was, but instead we just focus on proclaiming Jesus. And she just really affirmed me and us, staff and elders, in where we were going with this, because that was always the heart, is how can we reach the community for Jesus? And the 50th should be about that too, and not about looking back as much, though some of that's appropriate and good,
right.
and being thankful for God's grace. You know, it's good.
I think it's impossible to come to a moment like that and not have any sense of
gratitude. Because there's a sense of gratitude
and
remembrance, which is good, but that there should always be still a focus on proclaiming Jesus and reaching the community. And so that's what she wanted, and was thrilled that that's what we were.
And I think the unique thing to kind of wrap our heads around is that we often talk about these family celebrations in the church in general, not just Tuason. And I think our default is to think church family, our family celebrations. And one of the things I think is really unique about our 50th celebration and the emphasis we want to put on it is that we want this to be a family celebration for community families not connected to our church. Like I think it would delight the heart of God and the heart of our staff, elders, whoever, our church, to see our parking lot full of strangers.
Yeah.
Eating food, playing in the toys, playing the games, having a good time, enjoying the music, enjoying the company, and hearing the gospel and celebrating with us. I think that would just be an incredible gift. We want you there, of course, as well. We want our church family there because we want them connecting with you.
Absolutely, and I think everyone has a role to play. Our entire church family has a role to play. One, inviting people, whether it's signing up to do a street or whatever. Also, a day of, things like not parking on our lot. Because we want to save the entire lot for visitors. So parking down the street, walking that day, that's a job. That's how you can practically serve, by opening up a parking space for someone who doesn't know Jesus, doesn't part of our church. If you're not already finding somewhere to serve that day, volunteer, help out, set up something, cook something. Even if that's not something you're doing, being a friendly, welcoming face, saying hello to strangers is a job you have. So, I mean, even if you haven't been assigned, oh, you're playing in the band and you're doing this and you're running that station or something like that, even if you're just coming, you have a job to do. Invite others. Walk, don't park on the lot, and be a welcoming, friendly face that's going to represent Jesus and the church well, as we hopefully see many others join us who aren't part of our church family at this time.
It'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
And that is happening. We should tell everyone.
September 20th.
September 20th. We got 15 minutes of talking about that without mentioning when it was happening. September 20th.
You're about to be inundated, though.
Yeah.
With flyers and more posters and all that's going to be hitting like in the next week
or so. Yeah.
Maybe
by
this Sunday.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Preparations are well underway. It's going to be a ton of fun elements. It's just mark it on your calendar and do yourself a favor. Trust me. Just be there. It's going to be fun. Do your part. Pitch in. It's always better. So we are, in case you also have been away and maybe not following the trajectory, we got 1 week left in our Acts series this coming Sunday.
We're going to cover Acts 12 to 28. No.
Yeah.
We're actually just going to chapter 12 in this series.
Yeah, so we're going to hit the other end of Acts in a year.
Yeah. This summer doing Acts 1 to 12 and then next summer doing Acts 13 to 28.
Okay.
Kind of divides the book.
Yeah. But, so we're going to wrap up Acts. And the last couple of weeks have kind of created some really interesting conversation pieces. And so in our time left, maybe we'll hit one or two of these topics. But as a reminder, before we head into that, if you got anything that you want asked, whether it has to do with our current sermon series, about the 50th, about Bible in general, theological thought, that you think would be a helpful question for us to answer on the B-side, or you're just curious and you'd like to know, we would love those questions. So please, we are always looking for good questions to tackle. There's lots going on in the world around us, and if you got questions of how you handle that, please send them to bside@tachurch.ca. But as we go forward, so last week talked about the conversion of Cornelius, the vision of Peter, and what I wasn't actually here, but from what I saw and heard and read, kind of the issue of race came up. Yeah. And how we deal with race. And one of the things I found myself, in a sense, playing devil's advocate, thinking through this issue of race, where I go, you know what, we are, as Canadians, inundated with American news. And American stories and American influence. And I think in the United States, race is a significant issue of conflict.
Yeah.
It's clear. So you hear, it feels like every
shootings.
2 or 3 weeks you hear of young Black men being shot by white police officers or whatever, and there's all these things going on, and
poverty, cycles of poverty issue,
it's clearly
education issues,
it's clearly an issue, but I found myself thinking, is that the case for us in Canada? And I say this because in Canada we don't have the same kind of checkered, terrible history in the same way. I might be speaking in ignorance a bit, but in the sense of the slave trade, we were kind of helpers of the slave trade, for example, in America.
Fighting the slave trade.
Helpers fighting it. Sorry, that's clearly what I meant, but didn't say. So I just found myself thinking, like, is this an issue in Canada? You know, I look at, we celebrate our multi-ethnicity in Canada, that we have this diverse kind of melting pot of different cultures melding together to kind of establish what is the ethos and connection of Canada. And so I guess I found myself asking the question, is this an issue in Canada? Like, is racism an issue that you think we talked about it? And I go, I don't know that I know firsthand a lot of Canadians that are racist, but maybe... Or do you think it is an issue and we just manifest our favoritism or our prejudice in different ways than maybe we see through American media? That was a really long-winded question. I hope it made sense, but that's kind of where I'm coming from.
Is racism a problem in Canada?
Yeah.
I think it's a different problem in Canada. I'm not an expert on this by any means. It feels like in the American situation, so much of it is the grandchildren, so to speak. It's the consequences of Civil War, which bled into the civil rights movement, which never really ended. And so you have this particularly kind of southern, northern issue, which is still, they're still paying the consequences of the Civil War and the civil rights movement that never really were addressed and fixed. Versus in Canada, I mean, the freed slaves escaped to Canada and were sheltered there. So we didn't have that same past where there's, where race relations were also tied to such deep issues. I think the other real issue in the U.S. seems to be there's cycles of poverty and education and bigotry in the system where these problems keep replicating themselves. And so there's systemic problems that, I mean, if you're born in the, particularly in certain places, a young Black man, you're going to be treated by the authorities with suspicion. Now, at the same time, crime rates are higher by blacks in those areas, but they're also treated like criminals from the first place.
Yes,
even though they haven't done. So there's a cycle, right? There's a cycle there. There's poverty and education issues. So, but then they're treated like. So you get into the issues are deep. They're deep rooted, and we are fortunate that we don't have the same ones now.
But we do have different ones.
Do you have different ones?
Like the French, English, Catholic, Protestant. They're not race as much, but they're.
There's tension at times, which we don't sense as much in the West Coast,
right.
But. Yeah. The other one I think that we go, oh, we don't have that issue, black-white issue, but we do have a native issue.
Right, yeah.
Which in certain places, there is cycles of poverty and problems of race and that actually manifests kind of similar things. It's not as widely felt maybe, or but in depends where you live. In certain communities, it's a big issue.
Yeah.
In other places, it's not. So it's less of a national maybe issue, but I think deep down everyone's a racist, because in your hearts you want to feel like you're better than other people, and like I think I said something in the message like, you know, nobody thinks they're a racist, and everyone can be kind of calm and polite about it, but it's in those angry moments that your racist tendencies pop out.
Yeah,
and whether it's actual race or whether it's about gender or whether it's about people like that, whatever that is, whatever that category, we love to categorize people and then dismiss them.
Yeah.
And in fact, in the story, we actually, when we read through the passage, we talked about how, you know, Peter shows up at Cornelius's house and Cornelius bows down and worships Peter. And Peter says, stand up, I'm just a man. And then Peter points out that, like, this is really not normal as a Jew entering this Gentile's home, but I've learned to not call unclean what God's called clean. And in this one little encounter, as he's coming into Cornelius' home, he actually dismisses two opposite errors that we tend to do and continue to do today. We elevate some people above human status into almost a divine celebrity idol status.
Yeah.
And we like subjugate, like demean others as subhuman. So people like that are subhuman. People like that are they're celebrities and they're idols.
Celebrated,
so we elevate people way beyond where they should and we demean people below where they should. And both are evil.
Hmm.
Both are evil and wrong. And I think they're natural out of our sinful, selfish hearts. People we don't like, we demean. People we want to be like, we elevate. We worship and we demean. And so I think it comes out. It may not come out systemically in the same ways in Canada as the States. I think it's still there.
And it may not come out through slurs or in the same kind of way we would identify, oh, these behaviors equal racist. But I think you're right in that we have a predisposition in our sinful nature to prefer and to neglect, like in the sense of, I grew up in a community that had a massive mistreated First Nations population, and the only racism I remember witnessing as a high school student that I remember seeing blatantly was toward First Nations people. While my high school had a large Sikh community of students that were a different race, I mean, predominantly a white school, but we had black students, and we had Sikh students, and we had India people.
Real India?
Yeah, real India, and First Nations. And generally, like, blatant, awful racism toward First Nations. Because it was that conflict was an issue in our community, that they were mistreated, and that there was a cycle of poverty, and da-da-da-da. But yeah, I think deep within us, I mean, I just think, like, think about... if you don't think you're a racist, or don't have those, you have to check. I would go like, what communities do you avoid as you live in the Lower Mainland? Because we know there's certain pockets of communities that have certain pockets of people, or, who are the worst drivers in Lower Mainland? Answer that question and you probably might see a racist. Like, because we all have our opinion about which ethnicity, whether it's, whatever. I'm not going to get into it, but I think you're bang on, and that I think it's interesting in that passage that Peter really, he hits both sides.
Yeah.
Like, because we are all, I think we're often geared to going, oh, like, we need to treat, like, these people, the mm-hmm. people that we might ignore, better. But we don't actually often address the other side where we're like, we're often putting people up on yeah. pedestals going, like, this yeah. is my guy, like, John MacArthur, Matt Chandler, John Piper, or whoever. This is
Kim,
like,
Kardashian.
Yeah, the worst, yeah. Those yeah. three are far better, or four that are far better than Kim Kardashian, but...
Yeah, and so I think segregation fuels racism because it's we feel racist. We hold prejudiced views against people we don't actually know. Mm. We're just assigning morals, or they're like this. We don't actually know people
yeah.
of that prejudiced view we're holding, but it survives. Prejudice views survive based on ignorance because you don't know anyone like that. So segregating people from each other actually makes it worse
yeah.
versus when you have friends of different ethnicities, you don't hold stereotypes anymore.
Well, you know what? I said to Ray, my wife, while we were coming back from our holiday, so we spent a week in New York City, and actually one of the coolest things out of this holiday was watching my little girl, who's 10 months old now, 10 months? Almost 11 months. Get a glimpse of seeing the world through her eyes. So we're walking everywhere we went in New York. We used subway too, but like we walk like 12, 15 kilometers a day. And she's in a little stroller, and my little Emma is like the socialite. Like she's friends with everybody, making friends everywhere we go. And one of the coolest things is New York is incredibly diverse in who you bump into just on the street corner. You have the CEO and the homeless person, ethnicities of all different mm-hmm. countries represented, and just what, like, and she's waving. She's doing this thing where she's waving and laughing and smiling at everybody.
Yeah.
From the homeless guy laying outside her hotel to the, you know, the highfalutin white woman on the subway to the black guy in the corner here serving us food or
Times
the waitress.
Square
Elmo. Yeah, Times Square, like, just every single, like, I said to my wife, it was so refreshing to see this kind of, like, she hasn't, there's been no level of prejudice developed in her yet through our influence or otherwise.
Or fear.
That it was just like this refreshing thing to see her see every person that we came across as equal and realize what it convicted me of in my own heart is how often, like, it's not my natural inclination.
I wouldn't say hi to that person.
Right. Yeah. Like, I avoid eye contact there, or I don't feel safe in this situation, or, you know, like, that smells, like, the homeless person smells or whatever. She just doesn't care. Like, she's just, like, smiling and waving, mm-hmm. and I just found it incredibly refreshing. Follow-up question, I guess, on race then. So, I think it exists in our community in Canada, and I think you're right. It looks different than it does in the United States, and it might be a little more subversive, but I think you're right. Deep in our heart, we're all prone to it. But on the flip side of the coin, when we look around our community in the Lower Mainland, as an example, we see churches that are kind of segregated in a sense.
Yeah.
And you talked about how the church is called to be a multi-ethnic family.
Yeah.
That's how God kind of created things. Yet, you know, we see a Chinese church or a Korean church or Taiwanese church or Polish church, German church, whatever.
Yeah.
What do we think there? Like, because that clearly is segregating people based on probably language. More language than yeah. race, but often race and language sometimes go together.
Yeah.
A lot of the time. So what do we do there?
The pro, I think there's a pro and a con. In favor of ethnic or language-based churches is there's communities of people who, in our city, who speak this language and don't speak English, how will they hear the gospel?
Right.
If we are one of the most multicultural churches or cities, sorry, in the world, and the nations are coming to live in Metro Vancouver, are we only going to reach English people? You have to learn English, and then you'll hear the gospel. So what we have is instead you've got churches working in most language groups that are living here. They're trying to reach, and often when someone moves to Vancouver, doesn't speak English or speak English well, they're going to connect with those of their own ethnicity.
And the same would be true for anybody who's born Canadian and speaks English
Yeah,
you move to another part. If you move to Korea to teach English,
you connect.
I got a bunch of friends who did that.
Yeah, you connect with all the expats out there.
Yeah,
the people that just naturally it'll help. You help each other.
We naturally do that in every situation. We tend to gravitate in unfamiliar surroundings to that which is most familiar.
So, language churches based on our language, like a Filipino church or a Vietnamese church, have great ministry opportunities to reach people that are moving to Vancouver, help them get connected to other people to proclaim the gospel in their language. So I think that's a great thing. I think that's an important thing. It would be wrong for us to only have, in the city of Vancouver, people of every language in living here, and yet we only all of our churches only operate in English, and the gospel is not available unless you speak. That would be horrible, because you're neglecting these ministry opportunities. The other side of it is, though, if all our churches are segregated, are we learning from each other? Are we benefiting from each other? Are we staying apart when we should be connected? And I think the ideal, though, is churches that are multi-ethnic, reflecting their community. So, you know, in a particular community, particular neighborhood or area, the churches there should reflect the similar demographic of their neighborhood. They're not just reaching one element of the neighborhood. If it's there's old people in the neighborhood, there's young people, there's families, there's middle-aged people, there's people of this ethnicity, that ethnicity, you're hopefully reaching all people, not just one kind of people.
Yeah, you want your congregation to be a snapshot
of the
the community you live in.
And showing the neighborhood, this is the best of the neighborhood, not just a cultural part of the neighborhood, but we are the neighborhood with the gospel at the center. Yeah. We're the best of what this neighborhood could look like. It's some of all of us, but with Christ at the center.
Yeah.
So that's sort of the downside of segregated churches based on those communities. So I think there are churches that operate in the middle somehow, where they're one church and yet operating in many languages. They've got ministries to different language groups so that they're still trying to hit both. They're one multi-ethnic family, and yet they're also they've got a Spanish language ministry, they've got a Chinese ministry, got some Mandarin people, Cantonese, you've got a Korean, you know, and they're trying to do both. And I think that would seem best to me. And I don't think it's one of those things where there's like, this is good and that's evil, but we want to do our best job we can reaching people of different languages.
Yeah.
So they hear the gospel in a language they understand. Really important. Also important is that we haven't segregated Christians so we don't learn from each other.
Right. And I think it's important to go look around. Like, you know, Tawasin is predominantly white community. It's very, you know, but...
probably changing.
It's probably changing. I don't think it's probably changing. It's clearly
changing.
I think it is changing.
And we need to change with it.
Yeah, and we need to... And so our response when somebody doesn't look like us walks through our doors should always be warmth and welcome, because I think that's what's happening in our community and it should be happening in our church.
What I think is interesting is a lot of Christians don't think of the Jew-Gentile question as an ethnic racial question.
Right.
And they go, of course. So they don't see that actually that's exactly the thing it's addressing.
Huh.
Is when Peter steps into Cornelius's house, he's crossing the harshest of ethnic barriers. It's just because the races didn't necessarily look different.
Right.
Race isn't just skin color, you know, but actually you're dealing with the ethnicity of the Jewish people and non-Jewish people.
Yeah.
And it was a totally ethnic racial question, is can my race interact with your race and can we be brothers in Christ?
Yeah.
And the gospel says yes. Yes, that the people of God is no longer defined around questions of ethnicity, but are now defined around grace and the person of Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
and it should put us, who know the gospel, on the forefront of fighting the racial prejudice of our world.
And it's incredible when you start looking at what the gospel is and what the gospel changes in the world around us, and we go, how does it change the way we think about race? Well. And we're going to get into that series in the next couple of weeks. How does it change how we think about all these other aspects of our life and love and happiness? And little snapshot preview. But anyway, well, we should wrap up here. That was great. Appreciate your thoughts on that. Yeah, it's good to do the podcast again. We would like to maybe do it next week. But in order to do that, we need some questions probably. So if you have them, please send them on anything we talked about today or something you're finding through your personal study, a book you're reading maybe, or the sermon series as we go through them on Sunday mornings. Any of them. We'd love to try and tackle them and handle them, or anything you're hearing in the news as well. And again, send those to bside at Tawasin. Nope, send them to bside at tachurch.ca. We'd love to have them. But for Pastor Steve, appreciate you listening, and hopefully we'll catch you next time.